off you go.
Thank you, yes. So the Cambridge Centre for Health Services Research is a collaboration between RAND Europe, which is not-for-profit policy research institute based just north of the city centre, whose aim and mission is to carry out research that helps evidence-based policy making, and the Health Services Research Group in the primary care unit in the Department of Public Health and Primary Care at the University of Cambridge, which is based in Edinburgh. And it's a collaboration kind of because it works. I don't think there's anything particularly formal, but it's kind of a joint collaboration between the two groups. And at the moment I work for both RAND Europe and the University of Cambridge, but in a couple of months' time I'll just be at the UTSR end of it. So today I'm going to talk about health services research, what statisticians working in health services research do, a little bit about the Cancer Patient Experience Survey, which is the data I've been working with, a bit about the title of the talk about measuring ethnicity, and then a little bit about surveying on response. Health services research explores access to the quality, costs, processes and outcomes of healthcare. Kind of asking questions like, do health services work? So kind of in other words, this is asking the question, do health services work and how can we make it better? It's not all done by statisticians, it's done by health psychologists, by economists, by quantitative researchers, by clinical, non-clinical researchers and by statisticians. It's not just done in universities, it's done in universities, think tanks, consultancy, healthcare organisations, clinical commissioning groups. What do statisticians in the health services research do? Well, we think about inequalities in health and healthcare. We look at variation between organisations in measures of performance and quality, drawing things like funnel plots. We think about case mix adjustment, the reliability of performance measures. We think a lot about surveys and survey non-response, and we do lots of evaluation. You know how the NHS is always changing and people have these bright ideas about how to make things better? Well, you know, somewhere along the line there's going to be a statistician on health services research scratching their head going, oh, how can we measure this? So lots of evaluation as well. What data do we work with? We work with kind of routine data captured electronically from clinical consultations. Things that tell you about clinical activity, we look at audit data across things. And then kind of more generally, if you think about your interactions with health services, you know, you've got things from feedback and complaints, you've got lots of surveys, and then there's lots of reports. So, I said HSR is one of the bits about health services research, it's about quality of care. And if you kind of think, it's kind of obvious, or it's one of the givens of health services research, that quality of care has three dimensions. Access, so kind of, can you see a doctor when you need to? When you go to the hospital, are you kept waiting? Kind of to do with, can you get the care you need? Clinical quality, you go to the doctor, does he give you the right tablet? And then patient experience. Patient experience is not the effectiveness of the clinical care that you receive, but the interpersonal aspects and the environment in which it's delivered. So, and I'm going to talk about patient experience. How does it kind of fit in, why it's important? And it's things like, did the doctor treat me as if I was a bed? Did the doctor look at me when I was talking? And also kind of things like, was the surgery clean? Did I have to wait a long time? So, how's quality measured? How is quality measured? Well, usually there's lots of routine data on waiting times, routine data on outcomes. When we talk about measuring patient experience, we often, if you're coming from a statistics point of view, look at survey data. So the Cancer Patient Experience Survey is one of the big national surveys that looks at measuring patient experience. About 60,000 responses are received each year, asks questions about experiences across the whole patient journey, from before diagnosis to follow-up care after discharge from hospital. So the survey is sent to all patients in England who are seen for treatment in an NHS hospital during a 3-month period and to make a primary diagnosis. So if you think about that for a minute, it's not incident cases of cancer, it's not numbers of new cases, it's not people who have a new diagnosis in a time period. It's also not prevalent cases, it's not people who are living with cancer. They're people who've had interactions with health services. And kind of that makes sense, because if you're measuring the quality of care, you want to measure the quality of care, you want to ask people who've had So here at the top we have again, the survey is sent to people, to all patients in England who are seen for treatment in an NHS hospital during a 3-month period who had a primary diagnosis of cancer. And this is a little bit of work we did. It was really simple. We looked at the relative frequency of the most common cancer diagnoses in different populations. There are some examples here. For example,
could I just ask about this? The horizontal distance is percentage response. Is that percentage per group?
Yes. So this is the relative frequency of each group. These 10 groups, the 10 cancer diagnoses.
Yeah.
And so in each group among responders to the survey, the sampling frame, people who responded to a question about having had radiotherapy, the relative frequency of diagnoses among cancer-related admissions, among incident and prevalent cases. So for example, if we look here at the leukemia line, there are far more people who have leukemia is a relatively common diagnosis seen among cancer admissions, probably related to the high burden of chemotherapy associated with leukemia diagnosis. On the other hand, if you look at breast cancer right at the top, a lot of breast cancer cases are...
There is an issue there with leukemia. You might go into hospital for practically anything and have a blood sample taken.
Yes.
And then they say, oh, you've got leukemia.
Absolutely. And that's probably one of the limitations of how here we're talking about how your diagnosis was recorded in your hospital record if you have a primary diagnosis of cancer. I go on to talk a bit about how hospital records aren't perfect, but yeah. So sampling. Talking that people are sampled from hospital records, they're sent for survey. Because the sampling comes from hospital records, there's hospital record recorded ethnicity that comes with the survey data, but also survey reported ethnicity. So we've got a survey data set with ethnicity for each individual reported in two different ways. The ethnicity recorded for each individual may be the same or it may be different, one or both may be missing. Why record ethnicity?
Same or different with respect to what?
Same as what, or
different from what?
From each other. So hospital recorded ethnicity and what people say in the survey.
Okay.
Is there ethnicity might be?
Yes.
Are they recorded in the same codes?
Yes. One or both may be missing. Why record ethnicity? It was only in 1976 that the Race Relations Act made race discrimination in the UK law. In 2000, the Act was amended to introduce a clear duty for organisations to monitor and tackle discrimination. And at this point in 2000, the NHS starts to routinely record patient ethnicity. Ethnicity is kind of a multi-dimensional construct. Lots of bits feed into somebody's ethnicity, perhaps shared culture or shared ancestry may be one dimension, or one element of how ethnicity is defined. Language, national identity, religion and country of birth all play a part. But actually what we ask is a single survey question. Ethnicity, even on this kind of single, simplified survey question, should be self-identified rather than assigned or classified by other people.
There is a potential issue there, which is that ethnicity in the genetic sense could be associated with genetic propensity for certain diseases. And I'll give you a specific example of that, which I noticed when I was in Manchester. You walk up the street and there's a thalassemia clinic.
Yeah.
And that is there because of the high proportion of people of the appropriate ethnicity who are liable to thalassemia, genetically speaking.
And that's kind of to do with the appropriate provision of services to the,
yes,
for the correct population.
Yes.
And this is the survey that ethnicity question that you would fill in. You would probably fill it in if you have had any interaction with public services over the last 15 years. So what did we do? I always have to look up sensitivity and positive predictive value, so I'm going to read them because I get them wrong. Let me find the worksheet and we'll read them out. So sensitive. If a patient self-reports that they belong to a particular ethnic group, then the sensitivity of the hospital record ethnicity coding is the probability that the hospital record will record the same correct ethnicity. We're taking here survey recorded ethnicity as the gold standard. And the positive predictive value, if a patient's hospital record states that they belong to a particular ethnic group, then the positive predictive value of the hospital record ethnicity code is the probability that the patient will self-report the same ethnicity. And then we just looked at them. Hi.
Just quickly, why you are taking the survey as gold standard, not the hospital?
Because the survey was sent to people. They reported themselves what they would define as their ethnicity and then report. So we're kind of taking back the gold standard because, you know, we did some, more qualitative research, we didn't think I was a statistician. We went and talked to some people who'd worked in war departments, war parts, and we went to talk to people and say, so how does this ethnicity code get into your hospital record? And, you know, probably it's self-reported. At some point, the patient was probably asked what their ethnicity was. However, it could have been filled in an error, it could have been perhaps there was a clinical emergency or a language barrier, perhaps relatives or people who came in with the patient also reported. So, yeah, we're taking the survey as gold standard.
So a few years ago, I actually attempted to walk up. And then when you're doing that, you kind of walk around and think, oh, okay, I've had an emergency admission. Well, they look white, on for a while. It's not very great quality.
Interesting question running in the top right hand corner there, because on the one axis you've got the patient self-reported effectively, and on the other hand you've got what hospital wrote down.
No. On one axis
the predictive value is the what hospital record.
Yes, so the positive predictive value is the probability that the patient will self-report the same ethnicity, so it's the proportion of people, the proportion of patients who self-report, who are white British, who self-report, whose hospital records say they are white British, who self-report that. So on each axis, it's a proportion.
Sure,
and
yes.
Then you're going to point out that you can't actually get the top left and the bottom
left. I'm not
going
to point that out.
But you can't, yeah.
There is an interesting distinction at the top right there. You have India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. And if I were, say, a hospital consultant and wanting to fill in that thing without asking the patient, I don't think I could tell the difference.
Yeah, and often for analysis, there are five bigger categories. There's white, Asian or Asian British, black or black
British. I mean, what the patient would report themselves as being is definite. I mean, they would say that they would know what they are. But just looking at something, Indian, Pakistani, Bangladesh, not easy. I mean, there are distinctions, but
there's
a lot of overlap.
And what we find here is that people from a white British background, if you're from a white British background, probably your hospital record is not in white. And if your hospital record says that you're white British, then probably you are. I think the Irish group are quite interesting to look at. But if your hospital record says that you're Irish, probably you would self-report Irish as your ethnicity. However, if you self-report Irish as your ethnicity, actually it's only recorded that way half the time. And actually, if you're...
They've got an Irish accent, they put them down as Irish, up my stuff.
Yeah. And if you self-report a mixed ethnic background, probably your hospital record's wrong. And if your hospital record reports that you're from a mixed ethnic background, probably it's wrong. So there's some variation in the accuracy by it. And then we did some other stuff. We looked at other measures of concordance. We looked at the percentage of concordance between the gold standard self-reported ethnicity and hospital records, and it's quite high because the majority of patients responding to the survey are white British. It's only when you dig down by different ethnic groups that you find variation. We looked at unconscious concordance. And we also looked at missing ethnicity, so both having not having ethnicity recorded in the hospital record as well as incorrect ethnicity. And you know, we're statisticians and health. health services research, so we looked at variation between hospitals, because that's what you do. You use a mixed model with incredible misinterpretations of the outcome, age deprivation, cancer diagnosis in the model, and the random objective. So, do I tell you the results? I do. I will tell you from here. So, there is more missing ethnicity than incorrect ethnicity in hospital levels, but for ethnic minority groups, there's very poor, as we saw on the graph, there's very poor concordance between records and stuff. We also found really big variation between organisations, which actually suggests that some hospitals are doing it quite well, and hospitals where there's poor performance could probably be improved. And then there's this little bit of homework. There's work in the US that did some very nice work looking at surnames and addresses in missing ethnicity and Medicare records, a probability for patient ethnicity. It probably wouldn't work in the UK because areas where people live are much less racially segregated. But these probabilities can be used in analysis where ethnicity is missing. So an update we did in this research was to develop a table of probabilities of the probability of the ethnicity that somebody would have if they have a missing ethnic group recorded in there. So, that was that bit of work. If there have been some questions as we go along, so I will jump on to a little bit more general statistics in health services research.
Well, I get that your opinion about this is interesting things. In that your plot,
yeah,
where you put, this one, it would be sort of interesting to see the size of those dots proportional to the populations would help, because we are looking at others that are definitely very special. The question, how many of them?
Yeah.
It might be just there is near enough.
Yeah, and that's why the overall concordance, if you don't break it down by ethnic group, is really quite hard, because...
Well, just to make it more important. And another thing about ethnicity, actually nowadays it's easy to measure it just genetically and cheaper, I don't know, for 30 bit you can do microarray and give your very accurate up to the, I don't know, region of Europe where your ancestors came from, or at least to Africa or Chinese.
Yeah, I don't know, to which I think the response would be probably ethnicity is more than just genetics, it's a funny combination of country of birth, place of birth, language, culture, shared identity, as well as the kind of genetic background. So,
it might complement it. It's maybe a sort of small sub-study, because you have blood, you...
But you need to get specific permission to do that.
Yeah, of course,
sign
with
permission.
All the ethical and other stuff that you can say.
Something related to that. So, all these people have they been surveyed only once? And if they have been surveyed more than once, for example, to measure their experience throughout these 3 or so months, and maybe they had every time to repeat their, you know, their ethnicity. Because I don't know if you're familiar with UK Biobank, which is a genetic study, and there we measure ethnicity as well. So there were 2 visits, and we saw. It's a visit, so people stake their ethnicity, and there is a lot of self-reported inconsistencies between the 2 visits. So we use the genetic data to determine ethnicity instead of the self-reported ethnicity.
Yeah, this is kind of test reliability of a survey measure. There are probably secular trends in how people record ethnicity. The mixed codes were only introduced in, I don't know, but when the NHS started recording ethnicity, there were only 10 groups of mixed codes rather than later on. So there could also be some errors in hospital records just because of historic codes not now currently reflecting. Yeah.
So I just want to point out that even in self-reported there could be errors.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is very strange, but it happens.
There's also been some work done with hospital records using CARES statistics database, looking at the consistency in the hospital record. You should have an ethnicity recorded for every episode you have interacting with hospital care. And there are trends, people aren't always consistent with the episodes of care. On the other hand, I would probably say the level of errors we see
about self-identification. Because it might be confusing specifically in minorities. Let's say my children might be confusing between British and Russian ethnicity.
Well, the UK biobanks were for UK-based people. Of course, there are very mixed ethnicities, but it's UK-based.
It's about that point that you said it's cultural. People might be confused about who they are.
And probably if you've got a hospital record, you want your hospital, the ethnicity of your hospital record to be the ethnicity with which you self-identify. And then, so statistics and health census research, well, it's mostly applied in the British methodology. And, you know, there are statisticians and there are applied statisticians, and there can be, you know, you apply the statisticians. What do? We do lots of performance comparison and that bit. And we think a lot about surveys and survey results. So it's CPES. The Cancer Patient Experience Survey I've been talking about in this first piece of research on, it's used for public reward for performance. Macmillan Cancer Support produced a lead paper, best hospitals for a cancer patient experience, and this usually gets picked up by the press. So, what the hospitals do? Well, two things. One, they improve the care that they deliver on the basis of the feedback that they get from the survey, or they think about reasons why the survey is wrong. What the statisticians trying to do? Well, you see, you kind of have theorists, whiteboard policy makers, think this one, the Eurist slide, this one. And then you get practitioners, doctors, nurses, managers, and kind of, you try to do a bit of research to break down the barriers, to think, to listen to the reasons why people don't like surveys, and to kind of try and work out reasons why, you know, to try and explain or to reassure, or to identify and address issues if they are there. In the Cancer Patient Experience Survey, one of the biggest challenges to the credibility of the survey findings is case mix. People say, our patients are different, our patients are sicker than your patients, that's why we should have patient experience minus 1. Our patients are special, our hospital's different, our hospital's in London. So there's lots of kind of feeling that these lead papers aren't biting. Kind of if you're a statistician, say, you're talking about case mix, but the narrative that comes from practitioners. So we did some work, we looked at the case mix adjustment of hospital performance, comparing performance before and after. We estimated hospital scores and case mix adjustment scores, and we estimated Kendall's power, which can be interpreted as a percentage of concordance in rank, and we also looked at the case mix models and looked at the proportion of variation in performance between hospitals that we estimated the case mix. And what did we find? And it's probably not that big of a concern. It varies by factor. If you ask a question in the survey, for example, what was your experience with your GP before you were diagnosed with cancer, then actually all the variation in hospital scores can be explained by case mix, because you're not asking a question about hospital performance. So perhaps older patients have different experiences of patients with different diagnoses. If you ask questions about how long did you have to work with outpatients, this is a brilliant question. No influence of case mix at all. Lots of people, did you have to wait a long time to get seen in hospital? People give you an answer, and lots of variation between hospitals and no influence on case mix. But this is probably a typical question. It's a question about overall rating of care. In policy, not statistics, you know, hospitals are flagged with a red, not very good, an amber, okay, and a green, if you're in the green, you're one of the top performing hospitals. And the pluses are hospitals that improve rank after case mix adjustment, and the minuses are hospitals that go down in rank after case mix adjustment. And there are a few hospitals that can go from red to amber, or from amber to red, or from yellow to green, or from green to yellow, but you know, it's only a few in general, because of course ranks are pretty good. We can't say actually, you know, probably it's not case mix adjustment. If your hospital is a poor performer, you're probably still a poor performer. Actually, reliability of organisation level scores is probably more of a concern, but people don't tend to worry about this because they're not statisticians. And so we look at this as well. But you can't really say, no, you're really worried about case mix adjustment. Don't worry about this, but you should be worried about reliability. So anyway, you can look at Spearman ground reliability is between organisation variance and measured scores divided by between organisation variance plus within organisation variance divided by sample size. So when the sample size is 1, your spin ground reliability is your ICC. There are kind of implications of having a hospital score that's not very reliable, below reliability means that if you're using the population, it's attenuated. But actually about why they don't act on or how they don't act on.
You're doing fine.
Yeah.
We're not that worried about it anyway.
So, talk to GPs, and what do GPs say? They say, why don't they want to act on nutrition food surveys? They say over-representation of infrequent offenders and people with extreme use, under-representation of those with literacy and language difficulties, older people, single parents, and busy working. They say, respondents are not a fair reflection. So basically what they're saying is you've got an issue with bias and you shouldn't say response. But you know, that's what the doctors are saying. So why does non-response matter? Sometimes it can be wrong. Literary Digest poll 1936 and unheard of this example. Nice. So the Literary Digest did a poll of who people were going to vote for in the 1936 US presidential election. They sent out 10 million cards, they got 2.5 million responses. So that's 20% response rate. Respectable, probably. But they have an overrepresentation of subscribers to the Literary Digest, so an overrepresentation of car owners and telephone owners. And they predicted Landon and Gallup in a survey of 50,000 people with a nationally representative sample and predicted that he's and, you know, tell if you are the person who designed the Literary Digest survey, but people are still using this as an example of people who got survey non-response form 100 years later. But then you look at the polls before the UK general election just last year, and you're like, actually, you know, maybe polling's something difficult to get right anyway. But why does non-response matter? Okay, sometimes it can go very wrong. Journals won't publish your papers. If you're academics, you know, you worry about this because it's not really a policy implication, and people don't act on findings of the survey because they're not on response. We're back to, you know, these are barriers for people's engagement with findings. We've said, you know, this is a real issue of performance of your hospital. So, do you think
There's a potential issue there, say, with non-response to the questionnaire about hospital experience. If you have been in hospital and get the impression that they can't be bothered, then you get the survey questionnaire and there's no point in sending that in because nobody will take any notice of it.
Yes.
So there's a sort of a feedback from hospital performance into response.
Yes. I agree. I'm going to talk about that, but
okay.
You've probably nailed it both at the person level and at the organisation level.
There's also the issue that talking about sick people, some can't respond.
Yeah.
If they die.
Yeah, it's an issue with cancer patient surveys. Between one of the responses to that is to make sure you mail out your survey with plenty of time. Another response is, and we did some work looking at this, and about 70% of people who remain on the senior survey are unable to return the survey because they die between being eligible and sample claim and being sent the survey. So yeah, it's an issue, probably not as big an issue as non-response, which is 30 or 40%, but yeah, particularly in some patient surveys, it's a problem. So this is my bit on survey non-response. Do you dream of 100% survey response rate? You know your statistician, you really should dream of. John Sinclair managers, you heard of this example? They survey Scottish ministers, 23 reminders in 1788. You dream of a 95% response rate for your surveys. This is an unnamed senior research group around Europe. So we had 95% response rate, and the committee said it just wasn't good enough. So we got the response rate up to 95% and said that would have to do. Everyone else? Things that can help improve survey response rates, incentives, pay people to do the surveys, money, send it at the same time as you send the survey, don't send it. Don't tell people you'll pay them if they return the survey, send a £25 note for the survey. Actually, £2 of work is just as well as £5, put it in the envelope with it. Non-money incentives work, but not as well as money, so pay people right. Lengths, make your survey short. Appearance, make your survey attractive, use colouring, make it personalised, and university sponsorship helps. Delivery. We call it delivery helps. Include a return envelope. The colour of the envelope doesn't matter. I love the people of this one. Okay, things that can help improve. field survey was motivated to contact voucher people, pre-contact, tell them you're going to do the survey, follow up from the survey, again, we need to get sort content. Make it interesting, user-friendly, factual, that means people attend the surveys more, if they're nice and factual, rather than if they're really complicated, full of attitude questions. Put relevant questions first. You know, if you're asking them about their cancer patient experience, don't kick off with, what's your income? Don't ask sensitive questions, but general questions last. So, you've done your really brilliant survey, you've followed all the best practice guidelines, and the survey response rate is still not quite 100%. What do? You assess the impact of non-response bias in your findings. So what's non-responsive? Somebody's moved house, we don't know anything about them. If they've died, if they're ineligible, if they refuse to take part, if they're too sick to take part, if they're too upset to take part. Actually, but no further information, they're refused, they're too sick to take part, would count as non-responding to the survey. If you've moved house, died, or shouldn't have been sent the survey in the first place, these people shouldn't be in your denominator for your response rate. The American Association of Public Opinion Research has all sorts of definitions about response rates, but these are the people you should cite. You need to make sure that the definition you use is the same. If you're comparing response rates across organisations might, you know, choose the response rate that gives them the highest response. So you're comparing, you know, make sure you use the same response rate with a multi-stage sample. You need to include non-response at all stages in the final calculation. So evaluating non-response, you need to look at response rate. You need to follow up non-responders. If you call them and say, you know, I think it's certainly, what's it like at hospital? You're not going to get the same findings as a paper survey because your mode of asking something is different, but you know, you might get information quite a little spot. What else can you do? You can compare responders to a reference population. That's kind of the graph I showed you at the beginning, looking at the cancer diagnoses we saw among survey respondents to other kind of populations. You can compare responders to sample frameworks if people who responded are not different.
I'm coming over there!
Compare your findings with other sources. Or a wave analysis. This is really cool, you've heard of wave analysis. People who take longer to return the survey are more like non-responders than people who get surveyed in this is really important, I'll send it back tomorrow. So you can kind of look at the length of time it takes to return the survey as a kind of proxy for non-response. Or interest question. This is brilliant. Include in your survey a question, are you interested? So say I'm sending out a survey about survey non-response. I say, are you interested in survey non-response? And everyone here would think, yes, it's fascinating. And somebody, you know, if I sent it to my parents, it took a long time to come back. And then you do an analysis, you look and see if your findings are different between people who are really interested in the topic of your survey and people who aren't interested. And you might think that people who aren't interested are more like non-responders. So, you know, lots of stuff you can kind of do to look and see if non-response is an issue for your survey. So back to cancer patient experience survey, it's got a non-response rate, 67%, but it's really variable between. This third point is really important. If response rate is not correlated with organisation performance, we will probably not be worried about bias and performance analysis. Otherwise, actually, you know, maybe the sceptical survey users who don't want to act on the survey findings have a point. So this work we're going to present now is a look at the work we had. We had survey responses, we had sampling frames, so we knew the age, gender, deprivation, ethnicity, and cancer diagnosis for people who were sent the survey but didn't respond. We also know how long the responders took to respond. And we asked, could variable non-responders be due to case mix or chance? So the top graph here, we have a histogram of 160 NHS hospitals in England, and we have a histogram of the response rates by hospital. So here we have an average of 66.5 and the spread of the response rates. In the middle graph, we estimate the Shonkin estimates of possible response rates. And actually, the histogram doesn't go in that much. Probably, response rate is being estimated fairly reliably at the Eastern level. And then in the third graph, the bottom graph, let me clean this one out. We use sentence CMA variables, which will tell you the response rate for each hospital at the mean case mix in the population. So it's kind of a case mix adjusted hospital response rate. And actually, you see, yeah, you know, the case mix of the people who sent the survey probably does explain some of the variation in response rates that we see between hospitals. But it doesn't explain the correlation we see between hospital response rate and performance, because we do. But
The interesting feature of those histograms is that the main effect of the adjustments is to push the bottom tail upwards.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't do much, doesn't do a lot to the top tail.
Yeah. Is that a bounding thing?
Well, I don't know, because the...
No, it's probably the scale of measurement, isn't it? We use logistic models now, we're reporting the histograms on, a new scale. Response rate quality relationship. And actually, we adjusted the size and it didn't make any difference. Yeah. So for almost all questions in CPES, patient report, better patient experience in higher response rates. And then we adjusted for a whole load of stuff. We adjusted for case mix. These were models using personal level patient experience as the outcome. And these are the crude graphs up here, so kind of the IOBA correlation that higher hospital performance is associated. And we adjusted person-level case mix. We adjusted time to respond. We looked at all sorts of interactions and adjusted them. And kind of we attenuated the relationship between response rate and hospital. And then we adjusted some hospital-level variables for hospital size. And whether the hospital was in London, because people don't respond to surveys in London, and hospital performance, so patient experience is generally worse. But we kind of, it didn't explain the relationship. So that, that would suggest that the relationship we see, or if we do see any bias, it's probably not just attributable to the case of variation. So then we asked, if non-responders did respond, what would we see? So there we used the case mix and the sampling rate to predict the performance of hospitals. 100% response rates. We predicted the experience of non-responders. We also used time to respond, which allowed us to add in your grumpy patient effect that late responders had more reported poorer experiences than earlier responders. So we predicted our non-responders with the same experience as late responders. So we kind of added in the I'm going to throw away the survey to have a rubbish experience. And what did we find? Well, actually, they're quite strange. The concordance in ranks between the observed performance and the performance including response rates predicted is pretty good. We see that overall national experience is slightly overestimated in the survey, because all these dots are just below the line. And we also see that it's at low performing hospitals that probably are particularly overestimated. So what we kind of found probably that the relationship between hospital performance and serving non-response is not a reflection of case mix or chance, nor is it the characteristics or poorer experience of non-responders. If non-responders did respond, the overall national experience would be expected to be lower, but the correlation between response rate and performance would probably be higher. Hospital level factors and administrative systems, we did some hand waving looking at questions where the relationship is stronger, and the relationship between response rate and experience was strongest. The kind of questions to do with administrative processes, did you lose your legs? So it may well be that, as you suggest, response rates are probably an indirect measure or indirectly associated with care quality, and they shouldn't be adjusted in any which we wouldn't do in the UK, because generally we don't report case mix scores, but in the States this is big. So what have I talked about? I talked a bit about HSR, what statisticians working in HSR do. It's about the patient experience survey, it's about our work on measuring ethnicity, and a little bit on surveying our response. Are there any questions? Thank you to Gary Martin and Yoris, who did lots of his work, and follow us on Twitter at CCHSR and Europe for scholars.
Thank you.
Anyway,
it's wide open to everybody now.
I was talking to someone this morning about the survey, and they were using Amazon vouchers. They entered everybody into a raffle, or they're going to, and you win £100 in Amazon vouchers. Yes, because Amazon's quite a thing. So instead of giving them cash, you could, and you could, you cap it to 100, you see, so you'd only have to pay one of them.
So this is incentives.
Yeah.
And Amazon vouchers are probably at the money rather than the non-money end of the
I think people probably do it, I think older people might do it for the company. You know, it may not just be the money side. I think, you know, something for them to do.
Online surveys, typically get a response rate of about 15%. It's really variable, but about 15% is what people say. It's about an online survey. Ipsos Mori, like Ipsos Mori, published a report saying typical response rates are online about 15%. So that's great, they're always saying that report. I run a survey with a response rate of 19%, and I was, you know, to a bikini, it must have been my colouring of my university sponsorship that won it for me. And I'm showing off about this to a statistician. He said, you know, probably just it's that your respondents were very interested in the topic. So, I don't know, I would probably say that your biggest predictor is that people care about the survey and they're interested in their topic.
And a lot of people go on the radio and television to drum up support, and that gives a bit of an aura to it, doesn't it? I think it must be because it's on the local news. So you can do it that way, can't you? Through the media, through local radio.
Yeah, and response rates are generally going down over time. I don't know. But I don't think surveys are going to go away. So we're still going to have them to think about them.
I mean, what would you say is a good sort of response rate? I mean, you know, sort of 80%, that sounds really incredible.
Okay,
I mean, what would 40 and 30% be?
Do you want to get your stuff into Gemma?
Well,
because
yes.
Their minimum response rate surveys is about 60%, I think. 60%. The general practice patient survey, the primary care survey, has a response rate of 37%. You might have had it, it's sent to 2 million people a year, and it's been running for 5 to 10 years, so you know you might have all by now. The adult inpatient survey, so anyone who's in supportive care, is.
Hogging this slide, you know. I noticed one of the reasons that you said people could respond was refusal. Now, I mean, I know moved house sort of can have an effect, but I'm quite interested in that refused one there, because why would they it sounds like it's almost a sort of against the ethics or something.
Really interesting, and if you really don't want to return, if they don't want to return the survey, but they care enough to get in touch with people who run the survey and say, I am not going to refer the survey.
Are they worried about client confidentiality or something? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there is that question, yeah.
It's a big issue. It's an issue for the survey, particularly surveys in health services research, where the sampling frame comes from hospital records. Episode. So there is some dimension of sending patient details to survey companies, or at least patient addresses to survey companies, and survey companies
yeah.
can send out the
survey. I mean, you might get a survey about your experience of your GP practice, and you might be worried that your personal response might get fed back to the practice. That may not happen, but you might be worried about it. And then you think, well, the last thing I saw might give me to know what I think about it.
We did a really nice piece of work around your on choice modelling of access to what people thought about storage access and sharing of their patient records. And one of the nice findings that fell out of regression modelling was that the regression it was from that people who had particularly strong privacy concerns didn't answer the question about income in the survey.
And what about functional non-response? I assume you've got that.
Yeah, and sometimes in the survey, for example, the radiotherapy questions, sometimes questions aren't relevant to everybody. Kind of what you call eligible enough as a response to include. If somebody just does the first page, you include it. If somebody does everything except the demographic characteristics at the end, you include it. So, yes,
sound as if, you know, it's hugely valuable to the community and the an appeal to the altruistic side rather than the enamored badge.
Yeah, CPES is exactly how it intended to say. It's just a with a very nice little personal letter from the chief executive where he prepared it. It's a well-run survey. But on the other hand, if you're
of service. Was it ethnicity, financing, or whatever?
What are the biggest, so probably, what are the biggest predictors? We did another nice diagnosis, the actual clinical diagnosis of the cancer you end up being diagnosed with is the biggest predictor. Your GP has to see your 5 lines and scratch your head and not quite know what's going on. Kind of simple specificity is a big thing there. So certainly clinical diagnosis is a big predictor. Younger patients have much poorer experience than patients. Minorities have poorer experiences than white patients. Interestingly, women have poorer experiences than men, but you only really see that after you adjust the diagnosis because patients with breast cancer have even better experience than patients with other cancers. There's not a big difference between
been issues with the language barrier, I don't know, in hospitals.
Yeah, headset is really complicated. I don't have projects, but you know, maybe surveys are a bit of a way that, albeit imperfect, they're a bit of a way towards gathering enough information about what the hospital's doing, where or where it could improve. Yeah, I'm just very interested. And it's also kind of where politics and health, politics and statistics collide, because, you know, it's not something that people have said, but sure, experiences with people around. But, yeah.
You look at response and ethnicity as well.
Yeah. Your young patients don't have this, aren't they? It's very old patients. So if you're middle aged, you know?
No, ethnicity.
Yeah. People from poor, I can't remember ethnicity, I'm talking to the other groups, so women. Living in poor areas with MSRAs less than people living in more affluent areas. I would suspect that the minorities have a lot of
themselves.
Any more?